Good afternoon. Welcome to the panel, Alexia Russell and Guy Williams, excuse me, please, with me this afternoon. Now, we had a big response. Sorry, I was just reading all the feedback about all the wonderful careers you've had. Listen to this one. Wallace, in my early 30s, I've had three career changes since I left school. I wanted to be a radio announcer, work in hospitality, and have a massive student loan to back it up. Wound up in insurance claims, which I didn't need a degree for, and I have not looked back. Another one here. Joe says, I've had four jobs in my life. I'm 41 and I've been working with the same coffee brand since I was 19. I've made my way to international goat negotiation, master roaster and green coffee bar. I love my job and I turned my passion into my career. This job is my university and the reason I get up at 3:20 in the morning. So thank you very much. Keep those coming. What did you want to be at the age of 20 and what did you go on to be? Loving your responses today. Well, National and Labor have worked together on a new bill to make it easier to build more houses by amending the Resource Management Act. It will allow up to three homes of up to three stories to be built on most sites without needing resource consent. Current district plans typically only allow for one home of up to two stories. It could lead to more than 100,000 additional homes being built in the next 8 years to come into effect August of next year. National leader Judith Collins says it is important to put aside politics in an emergency situation. So to discuss is Bill Mackay, who is a senior lecturer in the School of Architecture and Planning. Bill, kia ora, welcome to the panel.
Kia ora, Wallace and Alexia and Guy.
What do you make of this bill?
I think it's really good, particularly in Auckland and the big cities, which it's aimed at. Kiwi Build was unpopular because we were doing suburban houses miles from where anyone worked, and this will be different, and I think it will have public support.
Okay, so allowing up to three homes, three stories high, to be built on most sites and no resource consent. It also sounds like some pretty intense landfill to me, Bill.
But it's a bit like the city fringes of the big cities, and we're talking here Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, Dunedin, Hamilton, etc. Even Tauranga and co. But, you know, we've got to find places for people to live. And for those people in the leafy suburbs who are a bit worried about, you know, this kind of thing, it's a little bit like the Crossleys boom in the 1980s, where we were a city of one-story buildings, and then suddenly we got a whole lot of two-story buildings in the backyards. So it's the next step after that.
All right. Now, before we go to our panel, I just want to ask you, you know, you can build an extension, a deck, a sleep out, again, no resource consent needed. Are we going to see the start of a whole new era of crappy add-ons next door to us?
That's not quite correct. You can build a sleep out without a building consent, but if you put it in a side yard or if it's oversight coverage or something like that, you will need a resource consent. And I know someone a couple of blocks from me who wanted to put a 10 square metre sleep out on their site, but it was turned down by council. 10 square metres is nothing. You know, it's garden shed size. Three by three.
Alexia, what do you think?
Well, I think it's fantastic that National and Labor have got together over this because it means that they can impose this on councils and that it won't be rolled back when the next government comes in, and the councils can say to objectors and NIMBYs, as you say, oh, sorry, the government's making us do this. There's not really anything we can do about it. Our hands are tied. So it's going to be a great way, I think, of getting that intensification into the cities. You know, and look, let's face it, in Auckland, we have grown like Topsy. The place is so sprawlingly huge, it's ridiculous. And we do need to get that intensification like other big cities around the world. You know, three stories is nothing.
But intensification done right. And a lot of people would say Auckland is a prime example, Alexia and Bill, of many instances of intensification done really, really badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're learning though. Bill, do you think we're learning? Things are getting a bit better?
Fingers crossed. Fingers are always crossed. But I think we have got, particularly in Auckland, a whole lot of guides now about how to do it properly. And the leaky buildings problem was not a problem of planning permission or anything like that to do with the RMA. It was a Building Act problem, building code problem.
Right.
My only issue with this intensification is that, like, for example, we've got a whole bunch of new Kaingaora houses up the road from us. They look quite good, but the majority of the open space within that complex is car park. Now, they use the excuse that across the road and down the road and around the corner there's a big park, but people need places for their kids to play within earshot, you know, while they're making the dinner. They need that somewhere they can watch their kids to play, and more of these places need to incorporate some kind of reserve area playground within the complexes. There's and no, you know, we need to set aside the reserves
so that these people can. That's dead right, because you only need a very small outdoor area in this proposal, and it's on councils, I think. They're going to have more ratepayers living there. They'll get more contributions from these developments. They need to seriously look at, say, taking one house out of every couple of blocks and putting a neighbourhood park in there, because we will get more shade to neighbours and back lawns, and people need to walk the dog, have a cup of coffee in the sun.
And speaking of shade, someone says in the Netherlands, the three-storey terraced houses have longer backyards if they're shady so as to get sun. Across the street, the houses, those with the sunny backyard, have a shorter area. That's very interesting. Guy Williams.
Guys, I'm coming in hot. Are you ready?
Ready or not?
We're not going far enough. I want to see skyscrapers in Point Chevalier. We need to be building terrace houses and going up, baby. Build, baby, build. I don't want to hear about someone building an extra bedroom onto their mansion. We need to be doing high intensive housing in the city of our major centres, and we need to be doing it yesterday. Get the boffins onto it.
So more human filing cabinets for Guy Williams, Bill?
Depends how they're designed. And actually in Poitiers Road, there's a very good example of two side by side on Miller Street. One is a really good example of medium density that's, I think, 3-4 stories high, and the other one's not so good. We need to ensure quality.
Hey, nice to have you on the program. That is Bill Mackay saying that we need to ensure quality if we're going to do this. 100,000 additional homes being built in the next 8 years. He's a senior lecturer in the School of Architecture and Planning. Now, on the political side of things, as Alexia Russell said, this is really quite unique. Let's bring in Dr. Lara Greaves, who is a political and public policy lecturer at the University of Auckland. Dr. Greaves, kia ora.
Kia ora.
This ends decades of standoff on the housing crisis. Let me ask you, when was the last time we saw bipartisan politics like this?
Yeah, what an interesting day, right? So ultimately, like, I think it was Henry Cook who instantly tweeted, "When did we last see this?" And quite a few people had responded. It was around the anti-smacking bill in 2007. So if you cast your mind back, that was quite controversial. And basically, John Key and Helen Clark, Prime Minister at the time, held a press conference in the Beehive Theatre and agreed broadly to uphold police discretion in prosecution under that anti-smacking law.
And how significant is this, really? Because, you know, one of the main things is they all have a go at each other, and all the political programs, when it comes to housing, that will theoretically go by the wayside. Lara.
Well, fundamentally, both have issue ownership here because we've seen decades of sort of various housing policies that have made it more difficult for people to own homes, build homes, etc., and no real solutions over the past few decades. So when, at the moment, Labor can kind of point to National and various policies, especially under the John Keeler government, and National can point to Labor and point to KiwiBuild and say, well, what did you guys do? It didn't work. So currently, you know, across the board, there's this across the board ownership. So it is really interesting and novel seeing them get together. I still would say that National can later hit back at Labor and say, well, in principle, we agreed to these things, we agreed to this legislation. However, it hasn't come across, we haven't got that 100,000 homes. It's all your failure in delivery, and because Labor has been criticised in its delivery of policy before as well. So I think that that's fundamentally, yes, when we're looking at the election in 2023, 2026, I think that that's where they still have that potential for opposition to this policy.
All right, so failure of delivery, perhaps one spot to look for, Alexia, the political side of this.
Yeah, we're not going to get that delivery. I guarantee that we're not going to get it because we don't have the capacity in the industry. I mean, these global supply shortages are holding up materials. You know, you've got builders fighting over the last pallet of framing timber at Bunnings. You know, things are quite dire at the moment. All the builders who have just suddenly come out of level four in Auckland and are trying to do their, their distanced work, they can't even get materials to get cracking with the jobs. And then, you know, this is going to send people to the wall. We'll have fewer building companies. There are more problems here than just giving people permission to go ahead. The other thing is, every time there's a little house for sale, the demolition trucks are going to move in. Some developer will have paid a premium for that land. So, you know, because they're allowed to build three-story houses on it now. So in the short term, I think we'll see house prices do another leap up because the land is valuable now.
So doomed to fail.
I think just about everything about housing is doomed to fail, but we have to do something. You know, you have to start cutting making little chinks in it. And I think this is a good move. You saw them say there's no silver bullet today at that press conference, and that's absolutely 100% right. There is really, fixing the housing crisis is going to be a decades long job.
Quite a bit of response to this. We'll try and sneak some feedback in later. Guy Williams, a thought alongside Lara's.
I just think we need more radical thought. I mean, I'm a Green Party supporter, but both Labor and National have dropped the ball on this for years, and I wish some slightly more innovative ideas were taken up. As you heard, I don't think it's a Green Party policy, but my idea of building skyscrapers in Point Shev is still a winner.
Hey, now, Dr. Green, just finally, there has always been a lot of comment from the public, always the public, that on the big issues, can we not leave politics at the door? Could this possibly open up new bipartisan issues? Here's one, for example, climate change.
I would love it too. Like, I think around the elimination strategy as well, all the parties kind of agreed to that at certain points, and we see agreement on the 3 versus 4 year term generally across the board.
Right.
I would love people to get together and have some level of agreement. However, the one thing that I'd remind everyone of, at the moment we don't really have a centrist party. The Māori Party have gone left, and New Zealand First probably won't come back, but you never count Winston Peters. So ultimately, the centre is kind of a ground the parties need to cover off in terms of political marketing and branding and capturing the media voter. Top's been trying, but there's no one in the centre. So ultimately, like, I'm a bit sceptical that that's what they're trying to do.
All right, finally, Dr. Greaves, where does this leave ACT?
Yeah, so ACT seems to be the one bouncing around and figuring out different ways into criticising National. Now, ultimately, if National did move more to the centre and pull up on that centre ground, we would have ACT still out to the right. But ultimately, ACT and National have to figure out, they're sitting at about 40% of the polls together, they have to figure out under MMP how to form a government, and then that ultimately what is really tricky when we don't have those centrist parties to be able to form coalitions or confidence and supply with in future.
Yeah, kia ora, Dr. Greaves. I appreciate your time. That is Dr. Lara Greaves from the University of Auckland Politics Lecturer there. Panel, I'm with Guy. This doesn't go far enough. Let's go crazy with it. Zone the whole of Herne Bay, Ponsonby, Greyland for no less than 4 to 5 stories. Parisian-style streets. They are long, straight roads, gridded and ready for it right next to the city. Why haven't we done that already?
Wallace, we have. We have got so many inner city apartments at the moment vacant with nobody wanting to move into them. And that's because our mentality is not switched towards big city apartment living. And that's going to take a little bit of time to get their heads around it. As soon as they have kids, they want to run out to the suburbs and get their piece of grass. We have to change our mentalities. And once again, that comes down to providing really, really good public spaces for families in the city.
All right, now, so I know that...
I just dispute that. I don't think we have a lot of good inner-city apartments. I don't know if that's necessarily true. There might be some vacant, but they're probably pretty small and cruddy, I can imagine. Based on my experience living in the city and trying to find inner-city apartments, it's very difficult.
There has been intensification issues in Christchurch, and this is backed up by this person who says, I worry. Christchurch neighbourhoods do not need any more hideously dull, health-shaped housing developments. The city is riddled with cheap-looking car park-free bills since the quakes. Fine to go tall in the CBD, but otherwise no thanks until developers start building with us all in mind. Thank you for your comments this afternoon. 23 past four. The panel, RNZ National. Now, Auckland Council's Animal Management Annual Report has highlighted a 10% increase in dog attacks on people over the last year. They've also reported that dog ownership is up, perhaps due to more people looking for companionship through lockdowns. So how do we make sure our furry friends aren't menacing our neighbours? To help us out, I've got Chris Brown from Alpha One Dog Training. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
When you see headlines like this, where do you think the problem lies?
There definitely can be a lot of different reasons why there's dog attacks and dog fights, but my opinion of it is that there's not enough people that understand the kind of leadership that they need to provide for the dog when they take one in. So your average person is getting a dog and they're looking for a companion, and they're expecting that when they get that dog, they want to provide lots of affection and give it lots of treats and things like that without actually providing any rules or any leadership for it on a consistent basis. And especially when you're stuck in lockdown and all you're giving for your dog is massive amounts of affection, then when you go out and you want to take your dog to a dog park or you want to go out for a walk, your dog is more than likely going to want to attack and get into fights.
Is it?
Because of the amount of affection that you've provided. So with the dogs and how they live in their hierarchy, they have different dogs that will lead the pack. And when you take on a dog, the idea is that we want the humans to play that role of the pack leader.
Goodness me, I did not know that. Now, is it a lost cause once your dog is aggressive? Can we train them out of it? Or do some breeds lost cause?
No, absolutely. I mean, dogs, they live in the present, so you can always change a dog's behaviour, unless, of course, you've got one that's really badly in the red zone and it needs to go with a professional and to be trained out of it. But the most of it lies with the humans that are controlling that dog. So when the human learns how to provide the right energy and the right leadership, and let's say the human who is the dog owner lives a highly stressful life, then that gets put on the dog as well. So your dog has to take that leadership position from you. And that's when you can get dogs that are acting out on a leash and acting out off a leash. And also, a lot of people take their dogs to dog parks as a way to exercise them rather than exercising them first and using the dog park as a reward from the exercise. That makes
the
sense.
Dog park's a reward? Hey, I've got a panel here. I must jump into them. Alexia, are you a dog owner?
I am.
No.
Okay, Alexia's not? No?
No.
I just wanted to ask, I'm a nervous dog friend of dogs. I don't own a dog myself, but when I see dogs, I'm not particularly comfortable around them. Is there a way to, how do you calm a dog or make it so it's safer so you don't get attacked? Because I'm worried I'm going to get my face ripped off here.
Yeah, I mean, so the goal for you is no touch, no talk, and no eye contact. So ideally, you just want to completely ignore the dog, and the person who is handling the dog, it's their responsibility to keep that dog under control and keep it calm, especially if you've got people who are insecure around them.
Someone says, guy here, and I'm not quite sure if it's a pro guy or anti guy thing. What you do, guy, is you get on all fours.
Not quite sure about that.
Is that just a mean texter trying to sort of get guy in trouble, Chris?
See, I have to throw my weight in with guy here. I'm not checking on dogs. But how many times, you know, I try and ignore them, but how many times have they jumped up on you and you hear, oh, he's just very young, or he loves children. Yeah, he loves to eat them. It's just,
exactly.
It's the owners.
Yeah, for sure. It's all about what kind of rules that the owners are providing. Like you should never allow your dog to jump on anybody else or a child or anything like that, especially, you know, it's the owner's responsibility to keep the dog calm around strangers, around people, and when you're out in public.
Lovely to have you on the love you to have you on, Chris, and thank you for that. There was a few things I did not know there. So treat the dog park as a reward. That's Chris Brown from Alpha One Dog Training. Have you ever thought of getting a dog? Are you not a pet person, Alexia?
No, I got bitten by a German Shepherd when I was a little girl, and it's put me off my for life, really. And just as I was getting over it, I got bitten again when I was about 15. So I'm very nervous around dogs.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I try and be like common sense about it and clinical, and like the dog's not after me, it's the owner that's the problem. But there are so many owners now who are a problem that it can be quite scary. I live right next door to a very big park. Well, it's a dog, it's known as a dog friendly park, so a lot of dogs there. But I mean, you know, you're going back to talking about our high density lives now and our change in living environments. You know, I don't think anyone with a little apartment who's not willing to get that dog out twice a day and walking it should be allowed to have a dog. You know, I think is it maybe time that we introduce dog licenses like driving licenses, you know, so that people understand what they're getting into before they hand over the money for it?
I've got an even better idea on top of your dog licenses. What if we had rent a dog? See, I love dogs. I'm not comfortable around them. I can't afford one and also don't want to look after one. What if I could just hire one for an hour or two for, say, $20? Rent a dog. It's a great concept. They can be well-trained and it solves all the problems we've talked about.
And if you rented a dog for an hour, Guy, what would you do with it?
I would go to the park and play a wholesome game of fetch.
Right. All right. There is some sense in that, Alexia, because when my wife and I went to Tokyo, there were actually dog cafes that you could actually go and hang out and, you know, be part of a dog's life just for half an hour or so over a coffee.
Yeah, sure. If you like dogs, you go do that.
Yeah. Now,
Does the hair from the dogs get in your coffee? That's always my question. It seems kind of unsanitary.
Didn't with my... It was just fine. You had... I think the coffee was covered,
dumb
actually,
question.
To be... No, it's not... None of your questions are dumb, Guy. That's why we have you on the panel. But anyway, we've got a lot of feedback here. I always wanted to be a teacher, like my father, so it was easy for me. We have three grown-up sons who all left school and all had work experience and travel before deciding on their own career path. That was the best thing ever. They learned that they didn't want to stay in low-paid jobs and didn't waste time and money studying subjects they were not interested in. They have excellent, well-paid jobs, they work hard, and enjoy their other interests as well. Lovely feedback coming in through this afternoon, and thank you for that. Text us 2101.